So welcome to another episode of Power's Tale from the Superyacht Laundry. I'm here with Emma Ross, founder and owner of Seize the Mind. And we're here today to hear her amazing story. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Thank you for being one of my first interviewees. Obviously, we've been working in the same sphere for a little while now. And you were a guest speaker at one of my events. Yes. So I really wanted to get you onto the podcast so we can obviously get you out there to the community. So first of all, obviously the superyacht industry, how did you get into it?
I think my story is pretty kind of the common story. So one of my friends from South Africa started yachting, and we had both been kind of doing jobs together throughout university, you know, the kind of the hustle jobs. And she got into yachting first, and she started, it was so long ago, Cherise, it was like back in the day of like Yahoo
emails.
You're
only 25, right?
I wish. And so I was getting all of these emails with all of these photos that would take, you know, when the photos were downloaded like line by line.
Yeah.
And there I was living my best life, I thought, in South Africa as a new graduate. And there she was cruising around the Caribbean on a superyacht. And my first job suddenly just felt a little less shiny and a little less exciting when I saw those photos coming through. And as soon as she came home, I pounced on her, asked her all about it. She helped me get sorted, get my first SCW,
nice.
And then flew with me. She met me in on, got me settled while I started to day work, and then off she went on her job. So it really was an amazing woman that kind of led the way for me and held my hand a little bit. And then when it felt right, just dropped me in it in auntie in the toilet bowl, and I was like, bye, you've got this. And I just carried on from there.
Do you think, when you think back before you ended up working on board, do you think there was, you know, it maybe was always on the cards for you to travel? Do you think there was something like that? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think most yachties that I've met, I mean, it is a huge amount of risk and high reward involved. And I think it definitely attracts a certain type of person that's happy to kind of just fling everything into a bag, get on a plane, try something new, have that kind of really go for it attitude. And especially in the days we were doing it, all before smartphones. So like I was getting my like tickets faxed to me, and it had that whole
fax. I love a fax.
If I pretended to be 25, I would have given myself away then. And it just had that very kind of like exciting other world element to it. I'll be honest, I didn't know how much cleaning stewardess was going to be involved. So there's lots of South Africans out there that probably landed and just was like, what? I've never even made my own bed. I had made my own bed at that stage, but I didn't know my way around a vacuum or a mop or anything like that, embarrassingly.
What?
So yeah, it was a real kind of shift of perspective. But I wouldn't say I loved it immediately from the first kind of boat. I was in love with the lifestyle, not necessarily the job. I kind of grew to realize there's honor in, you know, service and looking after people and providing that kind of six level service. But yeah, it was a little bit of a bumpy start kind of figuring out that, oh my God, I have to do the cleaning. I thought I was just doing service.
I think it is always a bumpy start, you know, I did always make my own bed, and I was doing the laundry at home and ironing and stuff. But like you said, there is pride in service, but there's also an advantage to getting into that kind of regimented routine.
Yeah.
I think, you know, young people could really benefit from, you know, a few years being forced to get up at certain times. And then when you do leave, it's advantageous because you're just used to it, and you just do it automatically. So conditioning, I suppose you could say,
totally.
Yacht conditioning.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's painful in the beginning, right?
It is. And to be honest, like I never really loved the job at the beginning. I loved the people. The people that I met from the beginning were just incredible. Like they looked like me, they talked like me. And I think I'd kind of a little bit of a struggle in South Africa kind of growing up. And when water finds its own level, like you just feel like you're home. I definitely felt like I was coming home, going onto a yacht and living that lifestyle. Yeah.
What was the first thing you splurged money on that you really probably shouldn't? Do you know what I mean?
Again, I don't even think I'm going to be that unique or individual. It was probably a really lovely pair of sunglasses. Another thing, you know, South Africa 10, 15 years ago, we didn't have Instagram, we didn't have international brands, we had a very closed circuit of like South Africa. If you were rich enough, you could fly overseas, you'd come to somewhere like London, go to like Top Shop on like Oxford Circus, and that was like the pinnacle of like fashion.
Devastated that that's not there anymore.
Like, where do teenagers go and hang out and be all like, you know, kind of attitude-y? So I think seeing luxury brands actually in shops, and then the kind of the first thing that you can always buy as a stewardess is always like a handbag or a pair of sunglasses that you've seen Mrs. Wearing. And I think that was probably the first thing I splurged on, a banging pair of sunglasses that I probably thought I looked so cool in.
Well, unless you get drunk and leave them in drinkers, which I've done.
There's probably a trail of destruction. In my mind, heaven, you know, will be somewhere where all of your beloved animals are, but there'll also be like a walk-in wardrobe of all the things I've lost in bars around the world. Yep. I'm going to be reunited with that leather jacket. And
probably a few thousand euros of stuff. Obviously, you know, yachting is, you know, it is the job, but where did you go on board that you were like, oh my God, if I wasn't on board, you know, this place is special, and, you know, the opportunity to be there is special.
I think the first time is when we went a little bit off piste. I'd done the Caribbean, I'd done the Mares, and that was all very exciting. But it's when we went to French Polynesia. Wow. So three of my big things that I always wanted to do and achieve in yachting is to sail across the Pacific, do a Pacific crossing on a sailboat, which I did twice. To sail into my home port of Durban, which I haven't managed to do yet, and then to do 10 Atlantic crossings, or swim across the Atlantic, which I managed to do. So we got me and my ex-partner, who was a captain, we ran a sailboat, and we got a job that took us down to New Zealand. We took the sailboat from New Zealand up to French Polynesia. We had Argentinian owners, and just as we got to French Polynesia to start a 6 month kind of like, it was their brand new boat, their brand new purchase, we were ready to kind of be, you know, really kind of busy. One of the flus, I think it was swine flu, hit South America. They had people that were very sick, so they were like, go and do recce's, go and research restaurants. When we eventually do come, you know what we're talking about. And they never did. We had like 6 months. We had one 10-day trip in 6 months. The rest of the time was just us exploring, finishing it to going for a paddle, going for a snorkel. That was completely out of my spectrum of human experiences, living on an island and experiencing it like that for 6 months.
That's not a bad place to get stuck, you know. That makes like a shipyard
exactly
into a little bit depressing.
Prohibitively expensive when it came to the rosé, though, like even for yachting salaries, getting all of your provisions and everything from Carrefour was fine, but when you went out into the bars, even us yachties would clutch our pearls like, oh, that much for a glass of rosé. Now, we didn't stop us buying rosé. I'm just saying, it did make me pause for breath before I ordered two glasses.
You did tough it out. Well done.
Obviously, you know,
well done.
I'm a yachty.
So obviously, yachting has highs. When did it change for you? When you think back, when was the job kind of losing its shine and its glimmer?
I'll be honest, there were obviously always little periods where it's just always shit. It's repetitive, it's brutal, it's boring, you're cleaning the same cabins all the time. But like I said, because I had such an amazing team around me, there was always those little like diamonds every single day, and I would cling on to those diamonds. I would probably say, because I've done the first, I consider my yachting career like two halves. So I'd done the first 7 to 10 years with my partner. We were together. He was the captain. I was living in the captain's kind of cabin, all very fabulous. And we were a young captain couple. So life like that was brilliant, and with its little struggles along the way, as per usual. Then I left when we broke up, and I went home, and then I re-engaged, and the second half of my yachting career started. And now I was doing it as a single female, a little bit older, a little bit wiser, but I didn't have that kind of that's protection of being in a couple anymore. So I very much realized how vulnerable younger single women were. I started to see kind of bad behavior that I'd never really been exposed to on board, and people just kind of boundaries becoming too porous, things becoming a little bit grey areas, guys coming into your cabin, doors being unable to be unlocked. And I'd never seen that side of yachting before. And I suddenly, it was almost like the blinkers were off and I started seeing the full spectrum of human experience on yachts. And I think that's when my relationship with it started kind of becoming a little bit more tenuous. And probably I was starting to look for an exit strategy in that second half of the yachting experience.
So like you, that was the first time you were exposed to like the vulnerability of being a woman on board. You know, we all face it in varying degrees and obviously on various boats, but it's interesting that you say that was obviously your first experience in a couple. It just wasn't.
I think, I mean, I'd obviously heard of the stories. I'd counseled people. I'd looked after people. I had loads of single friends. I mean, we didn't have social media there, so we weren't talking about it as much. You bump into your friends randomly in a bar, and all you wanted to do was get drunk and tell all the fun stories. And maybe at the end of a night when everyone was a little bit like loose-lipped and kind of a little bit teary, maybe a story would come out about how they felt vulnerable. But it just wasn't being spoken as much. And until I had that firsthand experience of it, where, you know, I started realizing how exposed you are, how vulnerable you are, how much this happens, how many stories are out there like that. I think maybe I just had my blinkers on, or like I said, I've been under that protective wing of being in a relationship, so no one fucks with me. And then once that had gone, I was like, oh wow, it really is. It can be a wild ride out there.
Well, back in the day with no social media and no Wi-Fi and stuff like that, you know, it wasn't as easy if you were having a tough time to connect with somebody outside the boat. So obviously, you know, the industry, as it does, it loses its luster. Did you have a plan? Was there an exit strategy, or, you know, or have you been fallen victim to the golden handcuffs? You know?
I've fallen victim to the golden handcuffs, and they definitely they're definitely very attractive and kept me there. I mean, I think I've left yachting twice or three times now. I wouldn't say I had an exit strategy that had any kind of experience or expertise to it. It was much more like, I'm done with it, I'm closing the door. And I was walking, I felt like I was stepping up. You know how captains always say you step up into a life raft? I felt like it was sinking for me, and I was stepping up into a life ashore in South Africa or a life in London. The last time I left, I did have a bit more of an exit strategy, but that's only because I've been knocked around once or twice before, and I was like, okay, I need to know what I'm doing. And even then, it wasn't flawless. It's very quickly I realized that tax-free money is lovely. Packing suitcases and having that kind of that lifestyle and singing for my supper, telling people amazing yachting stories, I'd kind of lost that. So I needed to kind of figure out how I was going to satisfy that part of my soul, how I was going to transfer those stories, or how I was going to just get that social capital. Because if you've been in yachting for 10, 12, 15 years, as I was, you have that social capital. Suddenly you have to start again, and you're a little bit further behind because now you're 40, entering into a market where, you know, half the jobs that I was looking for when I was looking, I didn't even know what the terms were. It's like all new stuff. So I suddenly felt very old, very isolated, and realized I probably wouldn't fit into an existing market. But I'd already had like a kind of a little seedling of what I wanted to do and honor my degree of psychology. So it was, yeah.
It's also like the writing your CV. Honestly, when I wrote my CV, it was the most depressing thing in the world to write your CV for land. You're like, I've been doing all of this stuff. I'm basically a hotel manager on the water.
Yeah.
But that's not how, it's not that easy to translate. And then obviously, what can you do? So I can resonate with like that lost feeling. Like literally, if you try to write down the experience for an employer, what language do you use?
Yeah, it's way more tricky. And I totally agree with you. If I'd stayed a stewardess, I would have found that hard, because I made a change. I started stewardessing and ended up chefing. It was a little bit easier for me because actually chefing is a transferable skill. It's one of the reasons I did do it. Plus the fact I'm really shit at stewardessing and I'm really cleaning toilets.
I'd be better at cooking.
I'm way better at cooking than I was at cleaning toilet brushes. So, but then you've got all these other things to deal with. So where yachting, we kind of like, you know, the money is amazing. The Black Amex paying for crew provisions is amazing. Suddenly I was having to budget in restaurants in London. I had to do shifts and all of that. I had to write the shifts. I had to get up really early. Yes, it's lovely going to sleep in your own bed. But if you're working 16 hours plus a half an hour like commuting, I had to commute for the first time, which is a miserable experience. No, whether you're doing it in your car, whether you're doing it in London, squished up against some builder's armpit at 6 a.m. in the morning, it's just never pleasant.
And why London? Why did you like, so obviously for our South African friends,
yeah,
where, why, you know, why not, what's the difference between London and going back to South Africa?
So I tried South Africa the first time I left, so I'd already done that. I found South Africa, going back to South Africa, quite a hard experience as an ex-yachtie that was now single. So I was definitely too old to be single. I felt I didn't have children. I wasn't married. I felt like I was an outsider in my own hometown, and that was really isolating. And your yachting stories only get you so far before people's eyes start glazing over, because if they haven't had an amazing gelato from Positano, they don't actually give a fuck. They don't want you telling them about what they haven't done in life. So I'd already tried South Africa and it hadn't gone so well for me. So then when I was kind of doing a little bit of an exit strategy chat with my therapist, she knew that what was really important for my personality type is she asked me, what you need is you need to think about living somewhere where you have a high concentration of people that love you and that you love. And I was like, ooh, okay, yeah. So she got me to write down a list of all the people I loved and where they lived. And when I did really smart actually. And when I did it, it was kind of equal Durban and London, and I'd never considered London. In fact, that's a funny part. Me and my ex-partner, we broke up. I mean, there was obviously other reasons we broke up, but the reason we had said is he would never live in South Africa and I would never live in England. I'm now living in London and he does not live in England either. We met up in Parma recently and had a bit of a giggle about it. So I found myself in London. I got myself an apartment. I traveled around different areas to see which area felt good for me, which area felt safe as a single female coming home at night, which had good green space, good connection. And then after 8 weeks of kind of traveling around, staying in 8 different Airbnbs, figuring out different areas, I found the place I wanted to stay. And yeah, it's just been great since then.
So when we talk about moving ashore, obviously it's easy to point out the negatives and how hard it is. Can you think of a few examples of working on board, how that has helped you move ashore?
How that's helped me move to shore. I think...
Or is it just the toughness of like, this is going to be a never-ending shift and I'm just going to keep going?
Yeah, exactly. I think yachties are really adaptable. We're really resilient. We think on our feet. We're also, most of us are incredibly, you know... We have an amazing social matureness. We're open, we're welcome, we're normally good at parties. So that kind of social element to our job definitely made it easier coming into a city, identifying friends, friend groups. And once you've got a friend group, or once you've got your tribe anywhere, that's just such a strong foundation to then kind of build yourself, test yourself. So definitely that. Also, I think the thing that I've noticed kind of working on shore and on boats is how hard yachties work. When I went into professional kitchens, people work really hard. Yachties work harder. We just do. We've got that kind of teamwork and that resilience and that reliance on each other that I don't necessarily see in other traditional
So we should have stripes on land and wear them all the time.
Because
we're just so good. Well,
yeah, we are.
It's a bit crazy for working that hard in the first place.
100%. But I mean, I'm not living in a kind of a town or a village in England. In London, hard work, social capital, resilience, they are things that pay off here. So maybe I found my tribe here, or it just was serendipitous that I found myself in London.
Well, the big smoke is not a bad place to start. Like being from the UK myself is pretty good.
Yeah.
So the idea. Ooh. So you have started Seize the Mind. A lot of the ladies listening will know of the work that you're doing. But let's get down to it. So you're here, you're in the UK, you're working as a chef. Where did the idea come from?
So it came from, again, serendipitous meeting. There was another chef who had started a company. I was trying to explore options for things for me to do. I met a woman who had started a company called Ladies of Restaurants. You know, when you meet someone and you have really high hopes for a meeting, and it was amazing. She is amazing, but the connection wasn't there between both of us. And I think I was looking for connection, desperately seeking connection. And we didn't have too much to chat about. We kind of realized, okay, this is probably the only time we're ever going to meet up. And as she was leaving, it was this throwaway comment. She said, "Have you heard of Toby Anna and this company called Kelly's Cause? I think they're aligned with you." So I met Toby Anna, did a bit of research. We had lots of wine in a wine bar in London Bridge. And she told me about mental health first aid and what she was doing. And as she was talking, I was just, firstly, so much admiration for what she had done, where she had come from, her story.
Give us a bit of information about
So Toby Anna was a chef. She went through the Cordon Bleu School of Cooking. And while she was there, she met another chef and bonded immediately. You know, one of those friendships forged in fire, like we have on yachts, like, but just in laundries and galleys. And they went through their training together. They both got their first jobs in London, new life, beginning of their life started. And Kelly, who the foundation is named after, really struggled when she got into professional kitchens. A lot of bullying, a lot of harassment, coupled with some other stuff that she had going on in her life. She unfortunately saw no other way and took her own life and died by suicide. And in the ashes of that horror and trauma, Toby Anna looked around to see if there was anything to help, anything to stop this happening, anything to help her in her grief. And there just wasn't. So she started Kelly's Cause Foundation in honor of Kelly and started bringing this model, mental health first aid, to hospitality. And I just fell madly in love with Toby Anna, her vision, her passion, her drive, her everything. And she encouraged me to do the course, to understand what the course was. So I did the course for myself the first time. And again, while I was going through it, it's a 2-day course. It's actionable. It's dynamic. It's really smart learning, very similar to what we do in our STCW, which I'll be honest, I'm a nerd. I love doing my STCW. I think it's such an amazing array of skills that we don't get in traditional formal education.
Well, no, you don't get to put out fires and go into pools and try and drown.
Yeah,
but also, it's a lot more interesting.
I'd way rather have that in my, like, that set of skills than know how to do calculus. Like, calculus hasn't helped me in my life, unless you're going into coding or anything like that. How to balance your checkbook, or how to balance your finances, how to have a life-saving kind of understanding, or put out a fire, household fire. That stuff is really essential. We're not learning it. So I have a problem with formal education when it comes to that anyway. So then doing my course, I just loved it. And before the ink was even dry on my certificate, I was like, this is it. This is the exit strategy. I will finally honor my degree that my dad paid for 100 years ago and was probably very disappointed that I hadn't used. The tying in of psychology degree, mental health first aid, action planning and action training, and all my years of expertise in yachting. I knew that stepping off a boat, there's obviously the temptation to be like, fuck it, thanks for an amazing life, but I'm done with you, and close that door. And I never wanted that. I just thought that would be such a waste, A, of my expertise and knowledge, but also I didn't want that door to close. I really love the industry. I have a lot of friends that are still in it. And I now have a niece that's in it. She's just got her second job. So now I literally have skin in the game. I want that industry to be better for the next generation.
I think there's a lot of ladies that leave that, like, it's just such a massive chapter to walk away and then just do something completely different. I think a lot of us would struggle. But generally, the industry has a very poor imagination when it comes to finding a use for ladies that have exited.
Yeah,
you know, apart from working in recruitment, which is just, you know, that's generally the first port of call, working in recruitment. But then also it is down to location as well. But it's also like when you've had like my experience, I'm sure yours as well, most of the time that I was in the yachting industry, there were tough bits, but I loved it. I loved it. And I don't know whether there is a point where you're like kind of giving back. Like I wanted to, you know, from my perspective, I wanted to honor that experience. Like there's got a way. And even build on that experience. Yeah. I think that's, you know, that it, would you say that's the kind of the same feeling?
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, I've had some of my best times on yachts. My best friends have come from yachts. You know, the mad stuff that you do, kind of like tying tea towels on your head and just being like absolute fools when it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you've just done, I don't know, 16 weeks of service. I wouldn't give any of that up. And to walk away from that and to not feel some ownership and some pride about what your experience was would have been a total waste. And yeah, I just didn't want it to, I didn't want it to feel like that.
It's also a feeling of connection, like the same if, you know, you're still talking to people that get you. And I think that's what yes. I struggled with when trying to move on land is when you're telling your stories to people that haven't worked on yachts, you kind of edit yourself a little bit. Always. Whereas, you know, if you have got the opportunity to continue to work in the industry, at least they get you.
Yeah,
absolutely. I don't need to do a translated version of myself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
my sister, that was when I was leaving South Africa when it wasn't going so well. One of my sisters said, she said, I think you need to leave. And this was big for her because she wanted me to stay. I had nieces and nephews. She loved having us, me, be part of their life. But she said, you know, you're less shiny when you're in South Africa. It's almost like you dull yourself down to fit in. And that was a wild kind
of revelation. That's really profound.
It was really profound. And it was amazing because she was sacrificing her, having her little baby sister at home and having the connection we had. She did it and she said it and she encouraged me to make changes because she wanted me to be as shiny as she knew I could be.
Well, you're very shiny. You are very, very shiny. So the idea, so now you're an entrepreneur. How's that?
Wild. I keep like turning to behind me, like, who are you talking about? That can't be me.
So Seize the Mind does what like this, yeah, like this. Put it in very simple terms for everybody.
Perfect. So Seize the Mind, we are a training provider, basically. So the model I was talking about before, Mental Health First Aid, is a brilliant model put together originally from an Australian company, brought to England by the Department of Health in 2007. And what we teach is two different classes. So a 4-hour awareness about mental health, how to look after yourself, how to become cognizant of your own well-being and have some resilience within a role. And being at sea, we know we definitely need that. And then we've also got a 2-day mental health first aid course, and that teaches head of departments, not just officers, anyone that has a duty of care. So, you know, while officers are kind of moving through the ranks and doing advanced firefighting, advanced medical aid, having to do their helm, head chefs and chief stews aren't having to go along that route, but they have quite often big teams underneath them that need care, that need that leadership quality. So we try and fill that gap as a little bit and give people the skills, the knowledge and the confidence to have mental health conversations, because as we both know, we've seen and we've heard about a lot of the statistics. Statistically, you're more likely to meet someone going through a mental health issue than you are to meet someone who's having a heart attack or an arterial bleed. So we give you the skills and knowledge to be that first early kind of response until professional help arrives, or maybe professional help isn't necessary, but to give that comfort in the moment so we can prevent injury, prevent life loss, promote recovery, or just provide comfort until we can get that person the help they need.
Do you think on board, so obviously, you know, we're all talking about mental health, because the job is tough and it will push you to your limits, maybe we've not necessarily got a mental health crisis, but if you have got something that is you're not solving on your own, it can escalate really fast because of the nature of the job.
Yeah.
So it's not that necessarily the individual's not coping very well, it's just that issue coupled with the fact of the pressurized environment is not going to pan out well.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is more extreme. The conditions we're in, the job that we do, the location of those jobs, being in the middle of the Atlantic, even just, you know, the unnatural nature of never being able to close the door, say goodbye to all your work colleagues, get into a car or a tube, come home to your partner and say, oh, God, that drove me nuts today. Release all of that energy, chat with your tribe, reestablish who you are and what your meanings and your morals and your values are, and then re-engage at work the next day, kind of with your tank filled up, you know, with your partner or your friends, whoever. With yachting, we live, work, breathe, eat breakfast. So if someone's pissed you off during the day, you might have to go out and have a crew dinner with them and kind of see their face. And that intensity definitely highlights or kind of squeezes a lot more out of people than you would get on land. Having been on land, I know that it's not just in yachting that we have an epidemic of mental health issues. I now realize it's everywhere, and there's lots of different factors. You know, the digital health, that's where yachting can be a little bit better than shore life, because if you are a single person living in a flat on your own, that can be really lonely and isolating and contribute to mental health issues. But on yachts, we've always got friends, we've always got adventure, we don't have financial insecurity. So it very much is a very specific lot of conditions on yachts. And I'm not saying that they're bad and shore life is perfect. It's just about kind of maybe figuring out which enemies you want to dance with and which are too much for you to cope with, and making those decisions individual by individual.
I think it's incredible what you're doing. And we've actually spoken together about it is a time of change within the industry, I have to say. But obviously part of what you're doing, you are an entrepreneur. So for any ladies out there that have an idea and are considering, you know, stepping up and being an entrepreneur, what would your three bits of advice be, you know, starting a business from scratch?
Wow. Okay. Three bits of advice. Save more than you think you have to, because money just leaks out of your bank account when you're shore based and you've bought houses and are paying bills and all the time. So just maybe even get really robust financial advice leaving. Plus you start having to pay taxes as well.
That
shit was all new to navigate. So definitely get a good financial foundation before you step off, because the money will never be as good. Then I think whatever you decide to do, whatever it is, wherever it's come from, you 110% have to believe in it. That's all that matters, really, because you will be rejected. You will be knocked back. You will have disappointing emails or contracts that never are fulfilled. And if you don't implicitly believe in the meaning and purpose of your idea or your business or what you're trying to do or how you're trying to change the world, I think it'd be very easy to get overwhelmed and give up. And even in having gone through all of those examples I just gave, the rejection and the heartache, the loss of contracts to other people, if I didn't believe in mental health first aid and I didn't believe that this had worth in our industry, I probably would have given up. I know I would have given up.
I think definitely passion for what you're doing gets you through the downs. You know, business is tough and starting new business is, you know, it is really, really brutal.
Yeah.
From my own experience, if I didn't believe fundamentally of what I was doing,
yeah,
I would have, yeah, you would just bail. Like, it's not worth it.
It's just not worth it financially, emotionally, mentally, even physically. It takes its toll. So you really have to believe in it and have the ability to believe in it so much that when you've had 100 days of rejection, you get up on 101 and you think, fuck it, I'm going to do this again. I'll do it differently. I'll do it. I'll research more cleverly and I'll just
pivot. It's my new favorite word. Pivot.
Pivot.
You pivot. Right. Yeah. I'm going to keep going, but obviously that's not quite right. So I'll just pivot, like, this new word.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to change it to my middle name, to be
Ooh,
honest.
Ooh, there we go.
Because I feel like I've done it so many times.
I always just think of the Friends episode when they're moving the couch, they keep saying pivot weirdly.
Yeah, no, it's the Friends episode, it is. But it is, like, literally, I feel like it's been chimed in my brain most of the day. So from what positives do you see that's happening in the industry? So obviously mental health is a brand new thing for yachting. I don't think there's ever been a time where they've focused so much on it. Still believe there's still stuff to be done, but what are the positives that you're seeing at the moment, which obviously encourage what you're doing?
The positives are people are starting to talk about it. We're starting to have conversations that I've been, you know, advocating for and felt like I was the only one screaming into a hurricane of, you know, denial. Conversations are definitely being had now. People are starting to see the benefits of it. And I think as well, we're starting, like, with companies like iSwan coming up, with Blue Ducks being launched, it doesn't feel like it's it's just me anymore, kind of shouting into the void. It feels very much like there are brilliant people with a different set of skills to me that are now kind of talking about mental health, wanting to make the changes. And every single person that is making the change right now that I'm kind of working with or in discussions with, none of them are on yachts. Some of them aren't even ex-yachties. They've got kind of either commercial interests or seafaring interests in another way. And every single one of us loves the industry and loves the people so much on it that we are prepared to sacrifice our mental health, our finances, to help that next generation, because we went through it. We experienced it. We know what it's like. We're not stupid and we're not going anywhere either. So that kind of sweeping it under the carpet attitude just does not work anymore. And I think that strength and the resilience I've got from all these other amazing companies and all these other amazing women kind of backing me, whether that's privately on a message just saying, I'm so proud that there's something like that out there. I'm supporting you from the sidelines, from a boat, or whether it's a company coming in and saying like, we want to promote you, or whether it's a management company saying we're going to kind of invite you to do our training with our yachts. I think that is really encouraging. And when I start to feel like, oh God, maybe there was a big part of me that when it was really bad last year, that was like, God, this is an amazing model. I believe in it so much. And I feel like I'm a bad messenger. Like maybe I should have been a smarter businesswoman or a better entrepreneur, or I felt like I was failing the model. And now pivot. I've turned around and actually I'm like, no, I am a good guardian of this model. And actually I just want everyone on a yacht. I think whenever I'm trying to think about a social media post or an article to write or a way to kind of knock on another door and tell them about the importance of it, the person that I've got in the back of my head is a young yacht female with her back up against a crew cabin door, feeling like she's the only person in the world that feels like that. And I just want a glimmer of hope. I just want a message to kind of punctuate her brain and say, you're not alone. It doesn't always need to be like that. It can be different. And there is support out there.
So 5 years from now,
global domination. Obviously.
where's Seize the Mind in 5 years?
Right. In a perfect world.
We're asking the ether now. Put it out to the universe.
100%.
By the way, can I please be working towards?
Okay, so 5 years' time, mental health first aid awareness will be part of the STCW. It will be ratified by all the member states, and every crew member that comes into yachting will have to do a 4-hour awareness to make sure they are strong and resilient.
Only 4 hours?
It's just 4 hours.
That's crazy, considering how big mental health is as a topic.
I mean, this is, like, as it says what it does on the tin, it's awareness. So it's just giving you awareness of the concept and your role that you can play and how you can be accountable for looking after your own mental health. So it very much is about the individual and them. There's a little bit of awareness about what the most common issues out there are, which reduces stigma, kind of fosters conversations, and can be really helpful. So that would be ratified and part of the STCW. And then any head of department would be having to do the 2-day, which is brilliant, the first aid. I would have someone doing my social media, because I absolutely hate that. And I'm sure there would be someone better out there, so I could just hand over all of that responsibility and have a thriving online community of people that were like-minded and people that could
find us. Any ladies on board that really want to work in social media, we can hook you up with the job. Exactly. Straight out the gate.
Get me up.
Like, honestly, if you want to do a side hustle right now,
yes.
There's a couple of older ladies that just don't want to do it.
I recognize it's not my forte. I don't want it to be my forte. I don't want to be that crusty old woman that's trying to do like TikTok and all of that kind of stuff. I'd much rather kind of empower another human to do that for me and get the benefits of it. I have 5 or 6 women that I have collected throughout my lifetime who are all independently brilliant at certain things. And in 5 years' time, I would like to have enough business, to have enough growth, to have clients, to have this ratified STCW revision that I have to hire all of these amazing women. And you know, when you become chief steward or you become head chef or you get
a position. Build your team back.
I want my team back. I know exactly what their job. I'm not lying.
True.
I have a workbook and I have written a company map for 5 years' time. I know what their roles are. I know what their how they'll all work together. I know that how it would be of benefit to mental health first aid. I have my sales team. I have my like working every single day team, and to work with them every single day and to have them in my life in a professional capacity would literally be a dream come true. So that's what I am consciously working towards, is building.
So hopefully there's a few ladies out there like, oh, you've got a job coming up, ladies. It's coming. So obviously, you know, in the next, that's a while away. We are doing a little bit for Mental Health Awareness Week.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
So, like I said, the awareness course is a brilliant taster. It's brilliant for the individual to go through. It opens up questions. It gives you the chance to have a face-to-face conversation with a mental health professional that's also got experience on yachts. And you get to meet other brilliant, like-minded people and form that bond over like a shared interest of mental health and wanting to change the industry and be accountable. So for Mental Health Awareness Week, what we are going to do is we are going to put a free 4-hour training online. We've got up to 25 spots that we're going to give away for free for the Pearls of Wisdom Collective. Mm-hmm. And what we would love to do is obviously give this away for free so people can kind of get a taste of what it's like. But most importantly, we want people to kind of feel empowered. Whenever I'm putting something together, whenever there's kind of these days, yes, it's great to get my name out there and it's great to do something, but at the end of the day, I want the crew to feel the value. That crew member I talked about having their back up against the wall, kind of feeling alone and isolated, I am appealing to those people. So
I think we like why I want Pearls and we're like offering it to the members, like you said, it's, you know, it's for individuals to do it, but while we're at this point with the industry, it really has to come from the individual. So if you are working for a boat or a management company that doesn't quite see the value right now,
yes,
don't wait, you know, just do it yourself. You know, you'll feel more confident, you know, it will only help your experience on board. So, you know, if it works, you know, if you enjoy it, you've learned something, then you pass it on. I would really like ladies to stop waiting around for the powers that be to say, do this.
Yeah.
Just take control and go, you know what, I'm going to be a better version of me, which will help on board.
Exactly. And to know that there is training out there and you could have engaged in it and it would have helped someone or saved someone's life or given them comfort in an incredibly distressing time, and you didn't do it, or you didn't wait for it, or you waited until the company said yes, would be really frustrating, having gone through some kind of pretty horrific and traumatic events in yachting. So do it. And then, if there is a kind of a window into that world, maybe even say to your captain, I know it's not really on your program, it is on mine, and this is the way yachting is going. This is the future of yachting and leadership. So I'll do the half-day awareness and I can feedback and I can tell you what's
whether it's worth doing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this is really to empower women and just, you know what, let's just stop waiting around for everybody to fix things and then maybe just, you know, do it ourselves.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yes, so we've got that coming up. That's in May. Obviously, if you're listening to this episode, all of the connections and links and everything will be obviously accompanying this episode. So to finish off, we are stepping into our Tale from the Superyacht Laundry. And in this section, we ask our guests, what is the most bonkers, weird, strange, intense story that they've had? So Emma, what would you say is yours?
I feel like this is my Graham Norton red chair story time. So I feel like I have to bring the crazy. So probably the story that's kind of the wildest in my head. I was on a boat, it was charter, and one of our charter guests was a very famous supermodel, a name that we would all know and recognize. And they came on and we, as a crew, obviously had our Christmas party. And one of the Christmas gifts given that year, I can't remember to whom from whom, was a kind of, it was a joke obviously, but it was a giant dildo, and it had one of those sucker bases on it. So I'm not sure what the origin of that is, but we used it as a kind of, it sounds terrible, but we used it as kind of a joke. So we would put it into the coffee cup cupboard. So the first person was always up was the engineer, and it would kind of like, he'd open up the cupboard and this thing would just kind of flop out at him. He'd scream, we'd all giggle, ha ha ha. We'd like paint the balls blue, then we'd put it into the freezer, and the chef would open up the freezer, this thing would hit her in the face or whatever.
Nice.
So it was just a little bit of fun to kind of break the kind of vibes. Anyway, very professional crew, obviously. As soon as this charter came on, every of that kind of stuff just disappeared and got zened, got put away, and we went into professional charter crew mode. So fast forward, we've now got the famous supermodel on the boat. She goes for a swim around the boat, and I'm still a stewardess at this point. I'm second stew, so my job is to go and do the bread and water and to report down to the chief stew and the chef that are waiting for my go-ahead. Supermodel walks up, dripping wet, looking absolutely fabulous, like I was drooling, and she sits down and she's like, sorry, whose cabin is on the 1, 2, 3, third porthole on the starboard side? And I'm like, third porthole? That's a crew mess. She's like, no, it's definitely a crew cabin. And I'm like, I'm like, no, it's definitely the crew mess. I'm like, is it a small round porthole or a large, big porthole? She's like, large, big one. I'm like, that's definitely the crew mess. And I'm like, why are you so curious? She's like, well, I just went for a swim, and I gotta say, there is a ginormous dildo squished up against that porthole, and I literally lost it. By now, the whole table had gone silent. I've still got the water, and I've got my chief stew in my ear going, are we ready? Can we go with lunch? Are we ready? Has everyone got bread and water? And I'm like, I'm looking at this woman, and I'm like, oh my God, I go bright red. I'm not very good at talking to famous people anyway. And I panic. And I said, no, it's not what you think. It's not what you think. It's the cruise dildo.
Wait, so what you're getting up to in the crew?
Yes, and she's just like, and as soon as I said the cruise dildo, they all lost it. They start laughing. I'm like, no.
We don't share.
I'm like, we don't use it. We earn out every single sentence I then said afterwards just dug us deeper and deeper into that hole. Eventually, I just slammed the bread basket down and the water on the table. I was like, I can't do this. They were in hysterics, and I had to go down and explain why lunch was late, because I've just been chatting to a world famous supermodel about dildos. So that was quite a wild story.
I'd love to know what her brain is thinking that the crew get up.
I'm sure they were probably thinking that and worse anyway, because all the guests, they always have such a curiosity like about the crew. We're almost like this fascinating curiosity, like, what do you do when the guests leave? What do you think we do? We clean up after all of your mess. It's never like we're
clean,
on holiday.
Clean, drink copious amounts of rosé.
Exactly.
No.
Use the sleep.
usual stuff,
Exactly. Well, I think I must have just inserted the idea that maybe we were definitely
inserted.
Oh, God. No. You see, that's what I'm saying. You bring dildos into a conversation and every single sentence afterwards can be interpreted in a weird way. So,
That's a brilliant story.
Thank you.
That is a brilliant story. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I really enjoyed covering your story. It's pretty amazing. And long may your work continue. We will be having Emma on again to talk about mental health and a number of different topics later on. But I hope you've enjoyed this.
Thank you so much. And so much respect and love for what you're doing as well. Just from the sidelines, always cheering you on and thinking how brilliant you are.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.